Lesson 14. Text A. After 20 years. O. Henry. Pre-class work. 1. Read the text once for the main idea. Do not refer to the notes, dictionaries, or the glossary yet. The policeman on the beat moved up the avenue impressively. The impressiveness was normal and not for show, for spectators were few. The time was barely 10 o'clock at night, but chilly gusts of wind, with a taste of rain in them, had almost emptied the streets. Trying doors as he went, swinging his club with many clever movements, turning now and then to cast his watchful eye down the peaceful street, the officer, with his strongly built form and slight air of superiority, made a fine picture of a guardian of the peace. The area was one that kept early hours. Now and then you might see the lights of a cigar store or of an all-night lunch counter, but the majority of the doors belonged to business places that had long since been closed. When about midway of a certain block, the policeman suddenly slowed his walk. In the doorway of a darkened hardware store, a man leaned, with an unlighted cigar in his mouth. As the policeman walked up to him, the man spoke up quickly. "It's all right, officer," he said confidently. "I'm just waiting for a friend. It's an appointment made 20 years ago. Sounds a little funny to you, doesn't it? Well, I'll explain if you'd like to make certain it's all straight. About that long ago, there used to be a restaurant where this store stands, Big Joe Brady's restaurant." "Until 5 years ago," said the policeman. "It was torn down then." The man in the doorway struck a match and lit his cigar. The light showed a pale, square-jawed face with keen eyes and a little white scar near his right eyebrow. His tie-pin was a large diamond, oddly set. 20 years ago tonight," said the man, "I dined here at Big Joe Brady's with Jimmy Wells, my best friend, and the finest man in the world. He and I were brought up here in New York, just like two brothers together. I was 18 and Jimmy was 20. The next morning I was to start for the West to make my fortune. You couldn't have dragged Jimmy out of New York. He thought it was the only place on earth. Well, we agreed that night that we would meet here again exactly 20 years from that date and time, no matter what our conditions might be or from what distance we might have to come. We figured that in 20 years each of us ought to have our fate worked out and our fortunes made, whatever they were going to be." "It sounds pretty interesting," said the policeman. "Rather a long time between meetings, though, it seems to me. Haven't you heard from your friends since you left?" "Well, yes, for a time we wrote," said the other, "but after a year or two we lost track of each other. You see, the West is a pretty big place, and I kept running around over it pretty lively. But I know Jimmy will meet me here if he's alive, for he always was the truest, best old friend in the world. He'll never forget. I came 1,000 miles to stand in this door tonight, and it's worth it if my old partner turns up." The waiting man pulled out a handsome watch, the lids of it set with small diamonds. 9:55. He announced. "It was exactly 10 o'clock when we parted here at the restaurant door." "Did pretty well out West, didn't you?" asked the policeman. "You're right. I hope Jimmy has done half as well. He was a kind of slow man, though, good fellow as he was. I've had to compete with some of the sharpest brains going to get my money. A man gets stuck in New York. It takes the West to make a man really keen." The policeman swung his club and took a step or two. "I'll be on my way. Hope your friend comes around all right. Are you going to leave immediately?" "I should say not," said the other. "I'll give him 30 minutes at least. If Jimmy is alive on earth, he'll be here by that time. So long, officer." "Good night, sir," said the policeman, passing on along his beat. There was now a fine cold rain falling, and the wind had risen to a steady blow. The few foot passengers in that quarter hurried dismally and silently along, with coat collars turned high and pocketed hands. And in the door of the hardware store, the man who had come 1,000 miles to fill an appointment with the friend of his youth smoked his cigar and waited. About 20 minutes he waited, and then a tall man in a long overcoat, with collar turned up to his ears, hurried across from the opposite side of the street. He went directly to the waiting man. "Is that you, Bob?" he asked doubtfully. "Is that you, Jimmy Wells?" cried the man in the door. "Bless my heart," exclaimed the new arrival, grasping both the other's hands with his own. "It's Bob, sure as fate. I was certain I'd find you here if you were still in existence. Well, well, well. 20 years is a long time. The old restaurant's gone, Bob. I wish it had lasted, so we could have another dinner there. How has the West treated you, old man?" "It has given me everything I asked it for. You've changed a lot, Jimmy. I never thought you would get so tall." "Oh, I grew a bit after I was 20. "Doing well in New York, Jimmy?" "Moderately. I have a position in one of the city departments." "Come on, Bob. We'll go around to a place I know of, and have a good long talk about old times." The two men started up the street, arm in arm. The man from the West, full of pride at his success, was beginning to outline the history of his career. The other, hidden in his overcoat, listened with interest. At the corner stood a chemist, brilliant with electric lights. When they came into this brightness, each of them turned simultaneously to gaze upon the other's face. The man from the West stopped suddenly and released his arm. "You're not Jimmy Wells," he said sharply. 20 years is a long time, but not long enough to change the size of a man's nose." "It sometimes changes a good man into a bad man," said the tall man. "You've been under arrest for 10 minutes, Silky Bob. Chicago thinks you may have come over our way and telegraphs us she wants to have a chat with you. Going quietly, are you? That's sensible. Now, before we go on to the station, here's a note I was asked to hand to you. You may read it here at the window. It's from Policeman Wells." The man from the West unfolded the little piece of paper handed to him. His hand was steady when he began to read, but it trembled a little by the time he had finished. The note was short. "Bob, I was at the appointed place on time. When you struck the match to light your cigar, I saw it was the face of the man wanted in Chicago. Somehow, I couldn't do it myself, so I went around and got a plainclothes man to do the job." Glossary: avenue, barely, brilliant, cast, chat, chemist, club, compete, confident, darken, dine, doorway, doubtful, empty, exclaim, eyebrow, guardian, gust, hardware, impressively, lid, majority, midway, moderately, oddly, outline, part, partner, pocket, release, scar, sharply, simultaneous, spectator, square-jawed, telegraph, steady, superiority, type in, track, tremble, unfold, watchful. Text B. A man who had no eyes. McKinley Cantor. A beggar was coming down the avenue just as Mr. Parsons emerged from his hotel. He was a blind beggar, carrying the traditional odd stick cane and thumping his way before him with the cautious, half-furtive effort of the sightless. He was an untidy, thick-necked fellow with long hair. His coat was greasy about the pockets, and his hand rested over the stick with a futile sort of clinging. He wore a small bag slung over his shoulder. Apparently he had something to sell. The air was rich with spring. The sun was warm and yellowed on the asphalt. Mr. Parsons, standing there in front of his hotel and noting the clack-clack approach of the sightless man, felt a sudden and foolish sort of pity for all blind creatures. And, thought Mr. Parsons, he was very glad to be alive. A few years ago he had been little more than a skilled labourer. Now he was successful, respected, admired. Insurance. And he'd done it alone, unaided, struggling beneath handicaps. And he was still young. The blue air of spring, fresh from its memories of windy pools and beautiful trees, could excite him with eagerness. He took a step forward, just as the tap-tapping blind man passed him by. Quickly, the shabby fellow turned. "Listen, Governor, just a minute of your time." Mr. Parsons said, "It's late. I have an appointment. Do you want me to give you something?" "I ain't no beggar, Governor." "You bet I ain't. I got a handy little article here." He fumbled until he could press a small object into Mr. Parsons' hand. "That I sell. $1. Best cigarette lighter made." Mr. Parsons stood there, somewhat annoyed and embarrassed. He was a handsome figure, with his neat grey suit and grey hat, and expensive stick. Of course, the man with the cigarette lighters could not see him. "But I don't smoke," he said. "Listen, I bet you know plenty of people who smoke." "It would be a nice little present," said the man. "And, mister, you wouldn't mind helping a poor guy out?" He clung to Mr. Parsons' sleeve. Mr. Parsons sighed and felt in his vest pocket. He brought out 2 half-dollars and pressed them into the man's hand. "Certainly I'll help you out. As you say, I can give it to someone. Maybe the elevator boy would..." He hesitated, not wishing to be rude and inquisitive, even with a blind peddler. "Have you lost your sight entirely?" The shabby man pocketed the 2 half-dollars. 14 years, Governor." Then he added with an insane sort of pride, "Westbury, sir, I was one of them." "Westbury?" repeated Mr. Parsons. "Ah, yes, the chemical explosion. The papers haven't mentioned it for years, but at the time it was supposed to be one of the greatest disasters in..." "They've forgot all about it." The fellow shifted his feet wearily. "I tell you, Governor, a man who was in it don't forget about it. Last thing I ever saw was Sea Shop going up in one grand smudge, and that damn gas pouring in at all the broken windows." Mr. Parsons coughed, but the blind peddler was caught up with the train of his one dramatic story, and also he was thinking that there might be more half-dollars in Mr. Parsons' pocket. "Just think about it, Governor. There was 180 people killed, about 200 injured, and over 50 of them lost their eyes, blind as bats." He groped forward until his dirty hand rested against Mr. Parsons' coat. "I tell you, sir, there was nothing worse than that in the war. If I had lost my eyes in the war, okay, I would have been well taken care of. But I was just a workman, working for what was in it, and I got it. You're damn right I got it, while the capitalists were making their dough. They were insured, don't worry about that. They..." "Insured?" repeated his listener.
"Yes, that's what I sell." "You want to know how I lost my eyes?" cried the man. "Well, here it is." His words fell with the bitter and studied drama of a story often told, and told for money. I was in the sea shop, last of all the folks rushing out. Out in the air there was a chance, even with buildings exploding right and left. A lot of guys made it safe out the door and got away. And just when I was about there, crawling along between those big vats, a guy behind me grabs my leg. He says, "Let me past you." Maybe he was mad, I don't know. I try to forgive him in my heart, Governor, but he was bigger than me. He pulls me back and climbs right over me, tramples me into the dirt, and he gets out, and I lie there with all that poison gas pouring down on all sides of me and flame and stuff. He swallowed a studded sob and stood silently expectant. He could imagine the next words. "Tough luck, my man. Damned tough. Now, I want to..." "That's the story, Governor." The spring wind shrilled past them, damp and quivering. "Not quite," said Mr. Parsons. The blind peddler shivered crazily. "Not quite? What you mean, you..." "The story is true," Mr. Parsons said, "except that it was the other way around."
"Other way around?" he croaked unamiably. "Say, Governor..."
"I was in Sea Shop," said Mr. Parsons. "It was the other way around. You were the fellow who pulled me back and climbed over me. You were bigger than I was, Mark Ward." The blind man stood for a long time, swallowing hoarsely. He said, "Parsons, by God, I thought it, you." And then he screamed fiendishly, "Yes, maybe so, but I'm blind, and you've been standing here letting me talk to you and laughing at me every minute. I'm blind." People in the street turned to stare at him. "You got away, but I'm blind, do you hear? I'm..."
"Well," said Mr. Parsons, "don't make such a row about it, Mark Ward. So am I."